Of those over 70, 1/6, which I think is 16.67%, according to my quick maths, have some form of vision impairment. So what can we as designers do for that?
Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we're focusing in on the senior, senoritas, the enduring elders, and the zooming boomers, and we're talking all about how we can design for older adults. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Well. My week has been mainly in workshops. It actually was really fun. We had 6 workshops for each side of the business of the client I'm working with, and I think the takeaway from it has been that every business has the same problems. And it's actually probably quite telling of the cultures that we create. But some of the things that came out were things like communication, people are siloed, their quality of data is really poor, and they feel like they don't collaborate effectively between departments. So yeah, in a way, that's a good thing because there are solutions out there that we can help them with. But at the same time, it made me wonder a lot about work and work culture and why we're all struggling with these things. But yeah, that's been my week. How about you, girls?
So I attended this really interesting talk that is probably going to be relevant to what we're covering today. It was World Accessibility Day last Thursday. And we had someone in the client organization I work at who actually is in the digital accessibility team come to talk about why accessibility is important, some key points to design for. And I think interestingly, she kind of mentioned that her own research was very much in understanding how to design for people with cognitive impairments, because very often when we think about designing for accessibility, a lot of focus tends to be put on the visual side of things. But it's also worth noting that there are many, many different types of disability, and I'm sure we're going to get to that soon. So yeah, I thought that was such an invigorating talk, really enjoyed it, and got the chance to meet some of the wider design team where I'm currently working. So it was really lovely, had a pretty good week. Weather could be better, but I'm still holding out hope that we're finally going to actually have a summer in the UK. I hope that's not too much to ask for.
The 35 degrees days are coming.
Without air conditioning.
That just reminds me, I went out yesterday and there were so many people on the central line. It was actually crazy because I think there weren't that many trains, and I swear, like, it was as packed as commuting into work would have been pre-pandemic. I was so worried.
Wow, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Central line.
The joys of living in London. Oh well, anyway.
That's all Lauren has to say.
No. It is the worst line, isn't it?
Yeah, with Northern, yeah. Right? Or is Northern better?
I would
better?
Argue that the Northern line is actually better. I think there's more space in the carriages. The only thing is it's so, so loud. So, like, if you don't want your hearing to prematurely disappear by the age of 40, especially if you take the tube every day, I think it's worth investing in a pair of earplugs.
Yeah, definitely.
Then on my end, I just want to give a shout out to my friend Vanessa Picker, who's currently hosting a really fabulous protest today. And so she's on the Oxford women's cricket team, and she's over at Lord's Cricket Fields in London heading up a protest because for almost 200 years women have been excluded from having equal access to Lord's, which in a way is like the symbolic home of cricket. So I'm just so proud of her for organizing that, and obviously it's happening today, so by the time this episode is released it will be in the past. But if you want more information, you can always check out their website at stumpoutsexism.com. That's stump, S-T-U-M-P. So shout out to you, Vanessa. We're really proud of you. And speaking of things we're proud of, this week is such an exciting episode because we're talking about how to design for older adults, which I just find really fun and fascinating given my background in gerontology. I think it's so important when we're designing to think about a variety of people, a variety of age groups, gender identities, just be as inclusive as possible. So I think oftentimes we can forget about older adults, but if we are successful in living, we will get old and one day be elderly. And no amount of Botox can fix this, despite my best efforts.
So I was actually trying to understand pensions this week. So this is very timely. Not that we will be talking about pensions. You might have to check another podcast for that. But yeah, they're very confusing. So older adults, we've got you. We've got you back.
Yeah, it's always good to plan in advance for the future. Pensions are actually really important. So that's a good reminder to start looking at how much your company is contributing to your pension.
And also how many pots you have. So you have probably 1,000 pots that you don't even know about. So that's what I was trying to figure out, how to put them all together.
Honestly, I don't really know. Is there some sort of pension grouping service that can help you streamline all your pots?
Yeah, I think there is. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out and how to do it. But yeah.
Keep us updated.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll do.
Let us know if they want to be a sponsor.
I know.
Thank you, Pot Space, for sponsoring this week's episode. Amazing. So I thought I'd give a little bit of a demographic overview, throw some numbers at everyone, just so we can kind of understand the breadth of this aging population. So it is expected that the number of people over the age of 60 will more than double by 2050, and that's from 962 million globally to 2.1 billion. And then it's expected to more than triple by the year 2100 to 3.1 billion. So globally, the group of people age 60 plus is growing more rapidly than any other demographic. And if we take a step back and we think about like the baby boomers in particular, and I've been actually loving the like okay boomer memes. The youngest baby boomer is 57. So if we think that these individuals were likely around during the introduction of cell phones, computers, think about those huge block phones, like the workplace of the 80s. They were there for the Commodore 64. They were there for Windows 95. They were there for Clippy. So these are people that probably have some level of digital literacy and have been using the tools at least part of their life in the workforce, but are not digital natives like us Gen Zs, us millennials who like pretty well grew up with technology and have learned it from a young age. So while there still are concerns about the digital divide, defined as the gap of the population who either don't have access to computers and the internet or lack that kind of understanding, that deeper knowledge on how to use it properly, I would say that the gap has definitely shrunk for older adults.
That is actually really interesting, and I guess it makes you kind of put into perspective how important this is. Because if we get designing for older adults right now, then all of these products and services and everything will be available for us as well. So yeah, it's definitely an important topic and something that we need to keep top of mind. But I do have a question as well. Like, in your experience, how digitally literate are your parents, grandparents, and other older adults in your life?
Yeah, I would say my mum and dad are actually quite tech savvy. My dad maybe more because he just has to use tech every day. I think he's quite good at figuring out how things work. And we'll probably touch on this later, but I think once you kind of have a concept or a mental model of how some of these digital tools work, then I think the process to find the answers you need or to find what you need in that app are always going to be quite similar. Otherwise, you know, he'll just Google something and try and work it out himself. And the other day, for the first time in a very long time, I called my grandparents on WhatsApp. Didn't realize that we were going to do a video call, but yeah, it all went quite smoothly. I was quite surprised, positively surprised, that they would find it easy to use. And also in the past, my partner and I have helped his grandparents try and figure out how to set up a Zoom account, how to do Zoom video calls and stuff, especially during the pandemic. And I just really like being able to, I think, teach in a non-condescending way. I think them how to use these technologies that they might not be as familiar with. And it's just quite interesting to see how when you don't have that practice of tech, or if you don't use it every day, then some of these steps, such as, you know, how to configure your Zoom account, are really, really unfamiliar to you, and you have to depend on other people to help you. But that's just been my experience in general. What about you, Lauren?
Yeah, and I like what you're saying about teaching some older adults how to use tech, because like it's the ultimate way to feel good is to like help a grandparent out with any piece of technology and they think you're like a rocket scientist and you're like you just feel so like proud of yourself. It's such a great ego boost. Yeah, it's either like you're a rocket scientist when you fix something or you're like a total hacker, and there is no in between, which I love. In terms of my family, yeah, there's a real range in terms of digital literacy. So my mom, very digitally literate. My dad, very digitally literate, but he actually isn't that good with typing. Like, he does the two-finger typing. But being a clever man, he's found a way around this, and he does a lot of the, like, voice-to-text stuff and dictating to Siri. So he's gone really creative there. And then my two grandmothers on opposite sides of the family, it's a really funny kind of contrasting extreme, in that my grandmother on my mom's side, she once wrote her first overseas email to me, and she put that in the email and she was worried that it would not be delivered on Sunday, which was like just the most wholesome thing. And then I've got my grandmother on my dad's side, who is basically an influencer. She has a ring light and a full zoom setup. She knows how to use emojis properly. In fact, sometimes I will write her letters and she will like handwrite letters and she will reply with an email with correct use of emojis, which is something my mom can't even do because my mom is an avid gardener. So for eons was sending me emails and signing them off with the aubergine or the eggplant. And my sister and I had to sit her down and be like, Louise, please stop. It's not what you think it means. I know you like gardening, but to the kids, this isn't from the land.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I was gonna add to like the teaching element as well that you mentioned, Yusin. I completely agree. I think there's a lot of, I don't know, fulfillment to get from sharing some of this knowledge, because I feel like they have so much wisdom that they share with us. So this is what we can offer. And I also think there are so many technologies that are genuinely incredibly helpful. Now, there are things like if you have an Apple Watch, for example, it can detect if someone's fallen or something like that. So if they're home alone or something. Obviously, heart rate, potential kind of issues if they're dealing with heart problems. So technology can really help us help them and can help, obviously, make them more independent as well. There are so many kind of services that combat loneliness at times as well. You can connect online and speak to an older adult. Yeah, there's so much that we can support with. Yeah, and it's really lovely. But in terms of like my parents and grandparents and so on, I actually am really lucky because my parents are very young. I used to go to my mom's job when I was very little, and she had like proper big computers with, you know, those monitors with that had like this massive back. They were like bigger than life, like white and huge.
Like the, was that the old Macintosh computers?
Oh no, we don't have those in Romania, I don't think. Like, I have no idea if I've ever seen those. But yeah, everything was Windows. But they looked very similar. They were just humongous. Like, everything's a flat screen now. But everything was not a flat screen back then. And yeah, I would just like play in paint. I would just be like, Mom, can I come play in paint and play? What was that card game? I don't know if you did have
Solitaire.
Windows computer. Yes, Solitaire. Yeah, that's all I wanted to do. And then there was the bombs one as well.
Minesweeper?
Oh,
probably.
I love that game. It was so Windows 97.
Yeah. I would even say 95.
Retro.
There was pinball as well. Was that on Windows?
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah.
I always lost at that one. It was too complex for
the double
my little
flap, and it
yeah.
goes through the center of your like the two little arms. You're like, no.
And I guess that makes me think about like designing for delight. Isn't it amazing the fact that Windows just like shipped these computers with three fun games in them? It's obviously like you don't have to, but like it's there. What delightful little games. I wish they still did that, some stuff like that. I feel like we either take it for granted now and are not delighted anymore, or they just don't think about it anymore.
I do get excited when I lose internet and I get to play the dinosaur game.
Yeah, that is a good one too. That is a good one too. So yeah, another delightful design. But yeah, my family is quite good. Yeah, my mum is just kind of like any person's basic level of just like being able to use, I don't know, browse the web and use Word and all of that, because she doesn't need anymore for her work and stuff. And then my dad is super techie. Like, he builds all the computers we have in our home, he built himself. I remember when I was growing up, our whole home was like his workshop for techie stuff. There's this website in Romania about, I think it's like how to get the best price online, and he was like the best contributor for tech elements. Yeah, so he's great at everything tech stuff, and he has a lot to geek about when he meets my partner every time. So yeah, my experience is very different. So yeah, since we're kind of talking about digital literacy from absolute basic, the next stage is to share some top tips if you are going to design for older adults. And I don't think this is a hot take, to be honest, but I think these top tips aren't just like if you actually create a product that is used specifically by older adults. I think you should have these in mind because any product can be used by older adults. So these are to factor in people with low digital literacy, as well as some sensory, visual, hearing challenges that come with age.
Yeah, you're entirely right, Lavinia, in that really designing for older adults actually just shares a lot with designing for really robust accessibility and just kind of solid UX and UI.
Agreed.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said about how older adults isn't just a specific population that you should be creating an additional product or additional version of your product for. It's really the idea of extreme usability. Often when we design products, I think we don't do this so much now, at least I don't sort of design for specific personas. But we used to think about extreme users, so users at both ends of the spectrum, people who are maybe very tech savvy and your power users really. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you might have people who are less familiar with tech. And I think just designing for older adults in general comes under that banner of, you know, designing for extreme use cases or extreme usability. So as long as you kind of keep accessibility in mind and make sure that you're designing something for people who might not be as familiar with some of these tech products, then I think a lot of those principles are going to be applicable to designing for older adults as well.
Yeah.
Basically just rehashing what you guys said.
And
when we think about designing for older adults and making sure that things are accessible, one of the things we tend to have front of mind is vision. And vision deteriorates as you get older. So vision loss is the most common disability for older adults. Of those over 70, 1/6, which I think is 16.67% according to my quick maths, have some form of vision impairment. So what can we as designers do for that? Actually, in our previous episode on designing for accessibility, we talked quite a lot about WCAG, or the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, which is pretty much the gold standard for defining how to design accessible products. And it's interesting because WCAG is about to be updated this summer. There is a current working draft for WCAG 2.2, and it's really interesting. Basically, on the WCAG website, there's a summary of everything that's changed from the previous release. There are some guidelines in there on how to design for vision impairments. As a start, ensuring that color contrast ratios are quite high is a good start. Most companies actually aim for level AA, which I think is a legal requirement in some countries. So WCAG 2.0 level AA actually requires a contrast ratio of at least 4.5 to 1 for normal text, which also means that if you are going to be designing a mobile app or a web app, really, or any sort of digital product, try and avoid, or actually not just try to avoid, but actively avoid using white on pastels or any other color combination that would be really difficult to read, even for people with perfect vision. And one way of testing that is, we previously mentioned, but we really like tools such as Stark, which you can plug into your design document and which tests the color contrast ratio for you. Font size is another one. So 16 points is currently the minimum as specified in the Human Interface Design Guidelines by Apple. And bonus points for giving your users flexibility, so the ability to increase or decrease the font size based on their needs. And then we also need to think about having large buttons. So the minimum is actually 44 by 44 pixels in WCAG. And that also gives you an increased clickable area size. So not only is this good for helping your users see more clearly what is in the button, but also making sure that they have sufficient space to interact with those interactive elements. And then the next tip we have really is just labeling your icons, especially in the navigation part of your site. This is just part of good UX, and making sure that there are prominent labels in a good text size will really help your users understand what they will get to when they click on that specific icon. So apart from just considering those points when designing a digital product for users who might have vision impairments when they're older, it's also important to think about responsive designs and designing for bigger screens, considering that I think many older adults in our lives actually use tablets rather than mobile phones. So older adults are one of the largest user groups of tablets. So whenever you are designing something as well, it'll be quite important to design tablet screens and just kind of test that, making sure that whatever design patterns you use for desktop also makes sense on a tablet screen.
I love it. And I think vision obviously is one of the biggest ones, but I think Yusin, you touched on this before, like when we think about designing for accessibility or design for older adults, we think a lot about vision and making sure everything is accessible from that perspective. But actually there's a lot more to cover, and one of them is hearing. Many people over the age of 65 actually suffer from some form of hearing loss. And to be honest with you, sometimes I think I do as well. So it's definitely not related to age. So as we said before, but just reiterating, this is really good, not just for people over a certain age. When it comes to tips in this category, simple is best. So there are only two things that we urge you to do. One of them is to ensure that, if relevant, ensure there are volume controls and they're accessible, easy to use. And on top of that, don't rely solely on auditory cue. So make sure that you pair that cue with something visual or a motion cue or, a haptic cue. I think this is kind of related to other cues as well. It's good when they're paired with something else. The same way when you kind of have a video, having subtitles is really good for people who are hard of hearing. So always have kind of like a plan B.
So then in terms of the sense of touch, looking at tactile, or designing for those with mobility challenges. And of course, we've got some tips about touch, tactile interactions, mobility, because of course we cannot overlook that element. So I would say try to kind of veer away from any gestures that require two or more fingers. This can be especially difficult for older adults or anyone with like arthritis or kind of tremors in their hands that require them to be a bit shaky. So they found that up and down or diagonal swiping is usually the easiest kind of tactile interaction. And then I would say try to limit or exclude interactions where like a very speedy response is needed, because speedy response times can kind of be a challenge for those that might take a little bit longer. And then there is an update from our friends at WCAG. So in WCAG 2.2, if a dragging movement is required, example is like maybe adjusting a slider, there needs to be an alternative way of completing that interaction, such as maybe like clicking on a minus or a plus to achieve the same thing.
Oh, I get it. So when you kind of have cards that go from left to right, you should also have arrows or something like that. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, like in carousels and stuff, I learned recently that actually they're not as accessible, especially when they're autoplay carousels. And one way to make them more user-friendly is to ensure like that there are steppers. And rather than kind of dragging on carousels, like you said, you can also click on the steppers to advance each carousel card by one.
Yeah, so in that way you can make it really clean. because you can have the swipe across, but then you can kind of have those maybe dots at the bottom or arrows. And then we have tips relating to memory. So there really is an element of cognitive decline as older adults age. And this is also manifested in older adults being more susceptible to dementia and Alzheimer's. So what can we do as designers? So one important tip is progressive disclosure. And progressive disclosure is a minimalist design technique that gradually introduces product characteristics that can really help to prevent that cognitive overload that you might get if you open up an app and everything is popping up in your face and there's just too much going on. You can also use helpful how-to modals or instructional modals, especially when you're first being introduced to an app. So I really like those ones that take you through a few steps, and also do have the option to close them if you kind of are not interested in going through those steps. Then reminders and tool tips in various places, that would make sense. Then trying to remove any tasks that require a lot of switching between screens. Confirmation modals are also really important. So clearly explaining, like, by clicking yes, this will happen, just to remind anyone about what the impact of that step will be. And then a clear home and return function. So this really acts as kind of the safety point, especially if you kind of wander down an area and you're getting a bit confused, being able to clearly go back home. And last but not least, a clear home and return function, so that if at any point you get confused or a bit disoriented in the product, you can always go back to this home page and kind of start anew. So final thoughts, just tying all of this together. I think in designing for older adults, it's also really important not to make them feel old. No one really wants to pick up a product that's like very geriatric, because in theory, by doing that, you're confronting your own mortality. If you're like, yes, this product specifically for old people, therefore by using it, I am old. So try to kind of make things as clean, as sleek and functional as possible, and avoid just being like, yes, this is for the extremely old grannies.
You can end every interaction with, okay, boomer.
I love the meme of the dog named Boomer, and he's so excited because everyone's using the term okay, boomer.
Oh, that is a cute name.
It's very wholesome.
Yeah, I think what you said about not making people feel old and vulnerable, like they can't really interact with tech, is really important. I think we strive to be very inclusive as designers, and I think Don Norman, who is one of the co-founders of Nielsen Norman, has actually written quite extensively on this. He is especially vocal in his hatred for things like walkers. You know, those things that elderly people push when they're like walking as a sort of mobility support item. I think he just thinks that from a mile away, when you spot someone walking with that sort of aid, it just instantly stigmatizes them. And I think it's become known as this very ugly, like old-fashioned thing that you walk with. But, you know, honestly, I think I saw an article by him, which we can link to in the show notes. By designing for older adults, you're actually serving a sliver of the population, which is growing in size increasingly. And it's really important to be able to cater for the needs of this population, just because we're eventually all going to become old. Like I think you mentioned at the start, if we design well and kind of downplay that stigma of products that are designed for elderly people as being less sleek or really less like sexy, then we probably will benefit from this in time to come. But also, I think this population has a really good disposable income, probably more so than younger people, so it's like quite important to capitalize on this silver tsunami.
Great.
And speaking of something we'd like to capitalize on, we've got our Hotline Design Hotline Caller of the Week.
Design Hotline, I'm Lauren, a longtime listener and first-time caller, big fan. I'm a designer, and I want to ensure that my designs are accommodating to all adults, including the elderly, but I don't have much time or budget to use your test. Do you have any suggestions on how I can keep older adults front of mind and design?
And it's actually not me. It's another Lauren.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for calling. I completely understand kind of the constraints of the project, but I'm still like really passionate about trying your best to still user test, especially since, I don't know, very often we are designing for products that we might actually use. But when it's a demographic that you do not represent one bit, I think it's extra important to user test. But as I said, I completely understand the constraints of the project. So in that case, all you can do, in my opinion, is do as much desk research as possible. So that means look at case studies and research from successful products that worked well for your particular demographic. And yeah, I think there's a few books out there, although I don't have a recommendation off the top of my head. But yeah, do some research and figure out some best practices from people who might have succeeded in this space.
Yeah, really good points, Lavinia. Especially, even if you can't do formal user testing, if you could even call like a parent, a grandparent, ask them, just kind of walk them through what you've designed, that might be useful to understand a bit more about how the user would actually interact with it. And then one of my recommendations is this really nifty add-on called Funkify. Now, when I first was introduced to it, it was free, but having circled back to it, I see that they've done well and they've been able to monetize it. So it is now £3.50 a month, but Funkify is a user disability simulator. So there are a variety of different settings you can test with. So there's one that impairs vision, so you can get like maybe a perspective of tunnel vision, or it takes the brightness of your screen and it significantly decreases it. There's one for motion, where your mouse is a bit shaky, to kind of simulate if you had a tremor or just like quite shaky hands and like mobility was a bit of a challenge. Then there's a dyslexia one that jumbles up all the words. So it's a really good way that if you don't represent that demographic, to sympathize and understand how their interactions might be different and to then make changes and help support how they could use your tool best.
Yeah, I think what you both have mentioned are really good points, really good tools. I would also think about, and we've maybe mentioned this a couple of times in the past, but user testing is really important. Up front, we can try and also bake that level of accessibility, especially for older adults, into the design process. So if you're lucky enough, I think, in your organization to have a design system, or if you're starting out creating one, looking through the WCAG guidelines for tips on how to make things accessible in general. And I do think that reaching that AA level of accessibility also takes into account some of the problems that maybe slightly elderly people might face when navigating the products. So reading through the AA guidelines, and then as you kind of build out your design system, or when you have your design system, ideally it would already have some level of accessibility inbuilt into it. If you have limited time at the end for user testing, at least you can be somewhat assured that at a certain level, you've hit most of the AAA level accessibility guidelines. So I suppose that's just kind of my little add-on. Trying to shift some of that designing for accessibility forward so that, you know, you don't kind of have to rely on user testing as a catch-all for any problems that might surface when you're designing for older adults.
Amazing. So Lauren, thank you so much for calling in, and we hope that answered your question. And that just about brings us to the end of the episode. So as always, if you've got a question, you can submit it at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod, and then at Gmail, hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and see you next week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.